Have you been on superhumanradio.com lately? Lots of free supplements, great information, and older episodes of Superhuman Radio are all available. Go to superhumanradio.com today.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tricepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tricepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show today. You're going to love it. During the first segment, we're going to be having a returning guest, Dr. Declan Norton from the School of Life Sciences at Kingston University in London. Always has something interesting to talk about. And today he's going to talk about the benefits of wine as both perhaps a performance enhancer and a masking agent. All in one. This is going to be an intriguing discussion. And then later in the show, we're going to be joined by Dr. Steen Larson. And we're going to examine the pathway in which statin drugs reduce muscle power and output. Very, very important discussion for our aging community who still wants to exercise. Before we get started, two announcements I have to make. The Age Force free promotion for their fat burner patch ends tomorrow at midnight. This is an opportunity to get a 1 month free trial of their fat burner patch, which now also includes 7-Keto-DHEA, a proven thermogenic. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad. Don't wait another minute. Many people are reaping the benefits of this patch by accelerated fat loss. What do you have to lose except a couple pounds? Secondly, there's a new poll on superhumanradio.com. I'd like the men in the audience to step up. Are you concerned about hair loss, thinning hair, or receding hairline as you age? I know I am. I know once I started on hormone replacement therapy, I noticed that my hair changed. Androgens have an effect on this. There are other things that have an effect on this. We are doing some research on some upcoming shows to give you action steps that you can use to both slow and even reverse your thinning and receding hairline. It can be done. But I need to know that you want to know it. So go to superhumanradio.com and take the poll, please. Okay, let's get on with the show. Dr. Norton, how are you, sir?
Hi, Carl. I'm good.
Fantastic. And this is really intriguing. You always have the most interesting topics to talk about. So what even made you look at red wine and testosterone levels in the first place?
Well, that's a really good question. I had what we call a final year undergraduate student do a literature research project for me, and I was looking around for topics, and one of the papers that had come out about 7 years ago from a group from the Karolinska Institute was that some anti-inflammatory drugs inhibit an enzyme that regulates levels of testosterone in the body. The enzyme works by tagging the testosterone so the kidneys see it and then excrete it in the urine.
Ah.
So if you inhibit the enzyme, you don't tag the testosterone, so you don't get excretion.
Can I ask what the name of that enzyme is? I know my audience all wants to know.
Yes, it's an enzyme. It's abbreviated as UGT, and the form of the enzyme is 2B17. So the very fact I said 2B17 will give your audience the idea that there are an awful lot of varieties of the enzyme.
Okay.
Of course, that do different things. So the UGT stands for basically UDP, glucuronyl transferase.
Okay.
So it transfers a glucuronyl, which is essentially a sugar moiety that the kidney then sees and kicks it out of the body.
So it's designed to aid in the clearance of testosterone. Now, interestingly enough, something that I learned a long time ago, unrelated but related at the same time, older men who are on testosterone therapy see a greater overall rise milligram for milligram on testosterone cypionate than younger men do. So perhaps as we age, this clearance slows down because we start to produce less testosterone, so the body tries to adjust. Because the young men in this study who received 200 milligrams of testosterone cypionate and the older men in this study received the same dosage, the older men ended up with much higher concentrations of blood levels, and they attributed that to a more efficient reduced clearance of testosterone. Could it be the UGT that changes in older men?
Well, what that says to me, without having done the empirical study, is that if you have got a compound in your body, your enzymes gear up in order to deal with the compound. An example is, if you drink a pint of alcohol once a week, if you go home and have 5 pints of alcohol, you'll probably be drunk. But if you drink 5 pints of alcohol every night, because your enzymes are all upregulated, it won't have the same effect on you.
Interesting.
So the same thing, the analogy from your story, is that the older men, if they don't have much testosterone knocking around, these enzymes aren't all upregulated and ready to go as such.
Beautiful. Negative feedback loop. Okay, so back to the discussion. So you're on the trail of this UGT 2B17. So what did you learn?
Yeah, well, what we did was we looked and saw, of course, one of the major issues with food is that it can have contraindications with drugs.
Right.
And that's a part of the story we'll come to a bit later, perhaps. But we also know that a great number of drugs actually come from foodstuffs. So some drugs are basically synthetic and from pharmaceutical industry, but an awful lot have their origins actually in foodstuffs, in nature, in plants, and in marine life, etc. So if we take a plant material, say like red wine or green tea, we can think of it as a chemical library of hundreds, if not thousands, of different compounds. So we can test something like this against an enzyme to see if it affects the enzyme's activity. And if there is an effect on the enzyme activity, then we can break into it chemically to analyze it and see which of the chemicals are affecting the enzyme activity. Mm-hmm. So it's a very easy way to see if there's a cross effect between a drug, it could be a medicine or some drug like testosterone that's produced in your body naturally, and a foodstuff that you're consuming, particularly if you're consuming it very commonly. So a typical lab assay we would set up would be to have an assay for this UGT2B17, pop in some testosterone, and measure the level of the testosterone changing with and without some red wine. When we added the red wine, we inhibited about 70% of the enzyme activity.
Wow, that's impressive. Now, so, was it the alcohol, or was it the flavonoids?
Great question. When we took the red wine and we took out the alcohol by evaporating it and then reconstituting it in deionized water so there should be no alcohol there, we got essentially the same effect. So then when we took pure alcohol at the concentration that it should be in the wine, having put into our test tube, and I should stress this is a test tube study at this stage, we found that the red wine had a small effect but nothing like the effect of the other components.
So did you distill down, as I think you shared with me off the air, you broke apart to try to find out what the active ingredients were that were actually causing this change in the enzyme, right?
Yes. The very next step was simply, it's a very straightforward thing where we do a method called chromatography, which separates out compounds in complex mixtures. So we pass the wine down through a chromatography system and separate it into its principal components. And then we just tested each principal component in its purified form. And we were very pleased to find that three or four of the most active components in the red wine were in fact very active against the enzyme.
And what were those? Was resveratrol one of them, by any chance?
As it happens, we didn't see resveratrol in this particular wine, so we only looked at one wine, so I'm not saying that resveratrol won't have this effect. But the ones we did look at, because we found them in the wine we tested, were gallic acid, cumaric acid, quercetin.
Wow.
And chlorogenic acid.
Oh, and chlorogenic acid is all the rage right now, I guess, because certain type of green coffee bean contains chlorogenic acid. I want to say, maybe I'm wrong about this, and they're using it now as a weight control, weight management product here in the United States, from what I understand.
To add to that, Carl, not to get across you, we also looked at their dietary green and white teas, and we found the same effect. And again, we broke down using the chromatography, and we found that the compounds are actually catechins, so epicatechin, epigallocatechin gallate, and catechin gallate had the same effect.
I'm so impressed that you said that, because I just always use the acronym ECGC because I'm always afraid that I'll fall over my tongue trying to pronounce that. So I'm really impressed right now. Okay, so this increased the circulation of testosterone. Did you actually test this in humans then?
At this stage we've done it in the test tube. But the thing to say is that we have done it at concentrations that resemble those that we found in the body, both of the kind of flavonoids we used and of the testosterone.
Okay, so realistically...
So it is resembling a real-life situation, but we have not actually done it in people yet.
So realistic amounts. So in other words, if someone... And here's the confounding part for me is the alcohol. So I love the fact that you were able to disconnect the alcohol from this response, because it's also understood, I believe, and I stand to be corrected, from early research that I read years ago, that alcohol has the potential to increase an enzyme in the P450 cascade called aromatase, which will convert testosterone to estrogen at a higher rate, which would make the benefits of wine for use for this reason actually counteractive. Now, I could be wrong about the alcohol and aromatase linkage, and I stand to be corrected by anybody who wants to look that up for me while we're doing the show.
But along those lines, as part of our introduction, we introduced our paper with the red wine by saying that red wine is associated with breast cancer. There's been debate about that more from the alcohol side of things. But it has actually been shown that red wine is an inhibitor of aromatase.
Really?
Yep. Okay. You know, under the conditions the scientists looked at it. And therefore, you know, that gives us further reason for us to look at its effect on the male and our endocrine system, the testosterone in particular. So that's kind of how we introduced our paper.
Okay. So based on your research, what would you expect a real-world dose of, let's say, a red wine concentrate devoid? Because they sell these red wine capsules now because of the resveratrol. What would you expect the dose to be? And what would you expect the outcome to be in vivo? Do you have any estimations?
We have some estimations, and they're in our, you know, in our publication. And in these estimations, I'll just draw you sideways towards a green and white tea, where we looked at the levels that you might get having taken supplements, etc., and they're well within the levels that we were seeing effects in our studies.
Wow.
So if someone's taking, you know, a healthy supplement of a green tea, for example, we were seeing, you know, the kind of activity that we're seeing in a test tube.
Now, we have to take a break, but what the other astonishing factor is that not only did it increase circulating testosterone potentially because of the change in this enzyme, but it may actually also mask that increase. Is that correct?
Sure. Yeah, okay. That is correct.
This is where it really gets intriguing. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up with Dr. Declan Norton. He is with the School of Life Sciences, at Kingston University in London. And this is going to really get interesting now. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
Products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WayNaturalUSA.com. WayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only 3 ingredients in WayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WHEYNaturalUSA.com. Calling all men. The Men's Stack is here from Muscle Gauge Nutrition. The Men's Stack will give you the energy you need to train harder and the materials you need to build new muscle. The Men's Stack includes American Protein Isolate, stimulant-free pre-workout Alpha Rage, Muscle Pump Activator, L-Arginine, AKG, and Multivitamin Plus Minerals specifically formulated for men. Now, Superhuman Radio listeners can get this Men's Stack for just $99 and free shipping while supplies last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Muscle Gauge banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Are you in the midst of cutting body fat? Feel exhausted when it's time to train but don't want to use pre-workout drinks because they're loaded with sugar and carbs? Ice V2 is here to help you get intense while carbohydrate depleted. Ice V2 has only 1 gram of non-sugar carbs per serving. Ice V2 is loaded with strength amplifying anabolic activators that will make your workouts more productive while allowing you to cut the fat. Cut the fat. Loaded with amino acids, Ice V2 contains the unique Formel Norvaline that acts as a pump amplifier. Get Ice V2 today at xfmuscle.com.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yo, give me something to dance to.
Josie's on a vacation far away.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. The discussion is about some of the polyphenols and flavonoids and factors found in both red wine and green and white tea and their effects on testosterone levels. We're talking with Dr. Declan Norton, a professor at Kingston University. But now the interesting part of all this is not only does this appear to elevate circulating testosterone levels, or have the potential, I should say, because the research hasn't been done on humans yet, but clearly has the potential, but it may also mask this elevation. How does it do that, Dr. Norton?
Very good question again. If you look at the water statistics for 2011, further a positive drug test, just under 60% were owing to steroids, with 54% of that 60% being testosterone. And what they measure is the ratio of the testosterone to a similar molecule called epitestosterone, which is inactive, we believe, that's found in the urine as the glucuronidated form. So that's after it's acted upon by the enzyme. So if you start to inhibit the enzyme, because the enzyme doesn't work on the epitestosterone, you favor the ratio in the urine away from the drug test.
You know, this is really interesting because I just thought of another angle for this. One of the challenges in male hormone replacement therapy is, which is not spoken about amongst clinicians typically, but recognized, is that after a man is on testosterone therapy for about a year, a lot of the benefits that are seen early on, the sense of well-being, libido, strength, better sleep, blah, 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 seem to start to subside and become replaced with thinning hair and acne on the back and so on, which has been attributed to, and rightfully so, an increase in 5-alpha reductase in response to the higher testosterone levels. And because when you replace, the testes kind of take a vacation, and the testes also produce progesterone to a certain degree, which has an anti-5-alpha reductase effect. But what just dawned on me, and to come full circle to the study that I cited earlier about older men and slower clearance, if you take an older man and you elevate his testosterone levels to youthful levels, after a period of time, I'll bet you there's such a great upregulation of this enzyme in response to that, that a lot of it gets bound up and starts getting carried back out in an effort to adjust those ratios. And it's almost like you're not getting the benefits of testosterone therapy any longer.
That sounds very good to me. I don't see any reason why that shouldn't be tested.
And if that's the case, then your research should tell clinicians that along with testosterone therapy, they should be using some flavonoid, you know, natural agent, whether it be a green tea concentrate or a red wine concentrate, in conjunction with the testosterone therapy for their male patients.
Well, I would slow a little bit down, and I would stop you at the stage where that should be tested in a clinical study in order to inform whether clinicians should partake in that practice. So just to have that little quality control of testing it to see that it does work. But yes, I think that would be a very good avenue to go down in research.
But see, that's because you're responsible and you're a learned professor and I'm just a radio show host. That's why. So, no, but this is really interesting. I hope that, there are lots of clinicians that listen to my show, that provide HRT. You know, I think one of the things that we need to start doing is testing this testosterone, epitestosterone level at the onset, at the middle, and then towards the end of the first year of the men that are receiving hormone replacement therapy, and find out if a lot of the benefits are being flushed out by the kidneys. Rightfully so, the body is trying to establish some homeostatic position, and it goes, hey, you know, we've got way too much testosterone for a guy this age, so let's upregulate and let's get more of it out of the body. I think that people like Dr. Chrysler, who I know listens to the show, we need to look at this. This is really intriguing.
I think to add to what you're saying, last time I was on your show, we talked about the vitamin D, and we can measure 10 forms of vitamin D in our lab. And there is a parallel between vitamin D and testosterone because they both have epimeric forms. So the epitestosterone and the epivitamin D. And generally speaking, most clinicians and scientists believe the epimer forms don't actually do anything. Now, do you think that we've evolved for several hundred million years, whatever we've done, and we've carried over something just to be convenient for water to do a drug test? I don't.
No.
So I'm suggesting that these epimeric forms actually have activities in their own right, which we have to begin to explore.
Interesting.
And one of the activities that they're likely to be doing is to regulate the testosterone metabolism. Because they're very similar to the testosterone or the vitamin D active form, except, as you know, a left-handed glove versus a right-handed glove. That's essentially the difference.
Right.
So there's no reason to think that they won't start to do the same kind of things a green tea does and start to regulate the enzymes. So there's a whole line of research there that needs to be opened up.
So what is the next step for your group? Will you start doing this in vivo?
We started to do a lot of things which we submitted for publication, so you'll understand I can't tell you about them, but they're not too far from what I've just been talking to you about, and looking at some work in humans as well.
Can I ask my doctor, and I have a very forward physician, Dr. Matt Andre, can I ask him next time I do a lab assay to also test my testosterone, epitestosterone levels, and if so, other than this area that you're working in, are there any known approaches to adjusting that ratio pharmacologically?
Good question. The study that showed for the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, I understand that was followed up, but the group haven't published that work to date. So that would be one avenue, but there aren't positive results in the published literature. And I tend to be one of these scientists who only talk about things in the published literature, because before that, you know, they could be one's own personal interpretation. With regard to the epitestosterone, certainly there will be, without a doubt, foodstuffs, etc. out there that affect it, but they just have to be found. And that's one of the things we're looking at the moment. So if you take, when I started talking to you today, we talked about the UGT2B17.
Right.
But then there's the 1A, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole family, you know, 20, 30, 40 of these UGTs. And there are different ones that act upon the epitestosterone. So now we're going through a phase of looking at what foodstuffs do to them. But one of the things that slightly concerned me about the testing, both for things like the vitamin D and for testosterone, is if you go in and take a test, you just take a test at one time point. That may have been affected by something you did 5 hours ago, but we don't know about it. So you could have had, you know, a bottle of wine the night before, and your testosterone could be completely changed. So I am with my team, a very good team of researchers, we are dedicating ourselves to her testing, where we can test over several months of activity. And we're making some steps in that direction. And we have assays now where we can detect, for example, testosterone. We published this work, epitestosterone ratios. We can separate them and detect them from your hair sample.
Yep.
And because in her, if you know, I've seen a picture of you on the radar, on the internet. So, you know, assuming you haven't had your hair cut recently, you've probably got hair that covers 2 years.
Well, no. Well, maybe you're right. I mean, I get my hair cut every 45 days or so.
All right, okay. Well, it's a centimeter growth is probably a month, so, you know, 5 or 6 centimeters will cover 6 months.
Wow.
And then we can average, and then we can start to see a real reading. But if you just go into doctor in the morning and take a blood sample, your vitamin D could be completely affected by whether you walk from the sun, from your car, into the doctor or not.
This is really intriguing. And, you know, hair sample analysis was all the rage for a while here in the United States, but then for some reason it fell out of favor. And in some places I hear, and I stand to be corrected, that it's not even legal. They won't even allow you to do hair sample analysis for whatever reason. I know that they do hair sample analysis for long-term drug abuse testing.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we do hair sample analysis for essentially two reasons. One is for healthcare, where we have ethical approval and we have volunteers, you know, from our university community, et cetera. And the other is where we have volunteers, for example, people who are on HIV therapy to see if they're adhering to the medication. But again, they're volunteers.
Interesting.
So it's not so much looking at the, you know, the criminal side of things.
So, okay, so while we build the show as this could become a method of athletes masking performance-enhancing drugs, there's probably a limitation on how much you can alter the testosterone-epitestosterone ratios by just trying to down-regulate this enzyme, because the body is perfect. It always responds in kind. When you push too hard to one side, the body does other things to balance itself out, right?
Absolutely. I mean, just to give you an example, we're looking currently at the effect of the compounds on the enzyme when the enzyme is expressed in the cell. But what you eat actually dictates largely what enzymes and how many of them are expressed in the cell. So we're looking at them once they are there, but there's a whole study that has to look at, you know, the production of the enzymes by the cell. So what you eat this morning would dictate largely what's in the cells at the moment, probably because it's responding to the food that you ate.
Yeah.
Of course, you have your baseline enzymes, of course. But
sure.
So there's that whole side to it. But you're absolutely correct. The body will respond to balance things and level things off. So if you think about, say, the masking the testosterone, you know, if you are an athlete and, you know, you have got a surprise visit by somebody to test your testosterone levels, you can't run out and drink 3 bottles of wine before they take your blood or your urine.
No, you have to prepare. As a matter of fact, we did a show 3 years ago where a gentleman came on anonymously from the Middle East who works with Olympic athletes, and he gave a piece of information about how to pass a drug test for athletes, but this was using a pharmaceutical approach. And what he basically said was his athletes use these anti-incontinence drugs, but you have to use them 2 days ahead of time before you're tested. They embargo metabolites of drugs in the kidneys, and they embargo everything into the kidneys so that anything that you're taking at that point in time will stay in circulation to a much greater degree. So it has some risks if you're taking other drugs, obviously.
Yep.
But athletes actually apparently use that approach. But that's a much more severe approach, a risky approach. But these are athletes that are using super physiological doses, I mean, very, very high doses of some of these drugs. But I see your research providing some real potential for the legitimate hormone replacement community. I want to talk when we come back. I want to go back into the individual components that you identified as having the effect and kind of sort them out and find out which proved to be most valuable. We're talking with Dr. Declan Norton. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Iron Mag Labs. Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinus Stain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
If you want to build muscle and burn fat, if you want to transform your body, your health, and fitness, then your goal should be to get a copy of The Blueprint from Rob Ragish. Learn what the Blueprint Army already knows. There is no faster way to change the way you look and feel than by using The Blueprint. And now, when you order The Blueprint, you will also get absolutely free the Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms in a Single Workout Seminar. That's a $20 value, absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Blueprint banner ad today.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh-looking. I use RG-Cell Super Stem Cell Support. RG-Cell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG-Cell banner. Ad today.
True Protein is now TrueNutrition.com. The company that gave you personalized protein blends has now expanded their offerings to include over 5,000 new products. Whether your interests are health and fitness, sports nutrition and supplements, or fitness gear and accessories, you'll find what you're looking for at TrueNutrition.com. Check out the new vegetarian and vegan product lines as well. Oh, and don't worry, you can still blend your own personal protein supplements with a full range of milk, whey, casein, beef, egg, rice, and soy proteins. Check out TrueNutrition.com today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the H-Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the H-Force banner ad today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. A little bit later in the show, we'll be talking about how cholesterol medicines affect energy production in muscle. Important discussion for those of you who are on one of these drugs and are still going to the gym and training and wanting to see progress. We're talking right now with Dr. Declan Norton, and we're talking about some of the components found in red wine and tea, and how they both affect increasing testosterone levels, or potentially increasing testosterone levels, while masking the marker that WADA uses to identify those who are juicing with testosterone. Very interesting. Okay, so getting back to the components, quercetin, what were the other three? You mentioned three altogether.
Quercetin, gallic acid, and caffeic acid are the big ones that have a strong effect in the red wine. In the tea, it's the catechins, epicatechin, gallocatechin, and catechin gallate.
Were any of these more profound effectors than the others, or they all pretty much act the same way?
The wine was the strongest compared to the tea. Tea knocked out up to 30%, wine up to 70% of the enzyme activity. So then if we take out the individual components, obviously you're only taking out one small component of the action, as it were, so you're diluting the effect as such. But from the individual components, the quercetin was able to knock out 70% of the activity. With the gallic acid and the caffeic acid knocking out, for gallic acid about 10% and caffeic acid about 25%. And about 25% region was what we saw for the catechins as well.
Okay, so now let's speak about quercetin for a second, because I perhaps unjustly have a concern about quercetin from the standpoint of its ability to bind IGF-1. Which, you know, obviously is where most of the real benefits from growth hormone production occur. It's my understanding, from Dr. Mark Gordon, and the reason I learned this is because Dr. Gordon, when he does a growth hormone test for a patient, he does not just check for IGF-1 levels. He checks for both IGF-1 and binding protein 3. And he said that that's the only way to tell that the IGF-1 is coming from growth hormone production and not just in tissue or from diet and so on and so forth. And he explained that when the body produces growth hormone, it produces a specific amount of binding protein 3 to help manage and regulate that growth hormone. So the binding protein 3 is produced in response to growth hormone production. The only thing that elevates binding protein 3 other than the actual production of growth hormone is the use of quercetin as a supplement. So should I interpret that as quercetin will deactivate the benefits of growth hormone, or am I misunderstanding that scenario?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I haven't looked at that area with the quercetin, but I would say that, not having read the work involved, that we're, certainly from the work I'm looking at, we're talking about the amount that you might take in a foodstuff. Now, I have also produced a paper which I found very interesting on red wine, looking at the antioxidant effects of red wine. And in this paper, what we did was we separated out the individual components of the red wine on paper chromatography. So you might have done this in school, where you put an ink dye on its bottom, and as the water goes up through the paper, it separates the ink dye into different spots.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
We did that after we challenged the red wine with some oxidants. So then we were able to see which of the spots disappeared. Okay?
Interesting.
So if you can follow this, you're breaking the red wine down on a sheet of paper, essentially, into the individual oxidants, but only after you've added, into the individual antioxidants, but only after you've added an oxidant like hydrogen peroxide or iron 3 or something like that, or a Fenton system. And what we found was that the most active antioxidant was quercetin.
Wow.
Now, what that's telling me is that the half-life of quercetin in the body is probably not so high because it's a very active molecule.
Uh-huh.
Now, what we found was that quite a lot, 50% of the alleged antioxidants in the wine didn't actually react when you put hydrogen peroxide straight on top of it. So this old story that red wine is full of antioxidants is half true and half not true.
Uh-huh.
So the glass is half full and half empty.
Right. Right. Wow.
So that would be a kind of cross-interpretation, because I'm not familiar with the work that you introduced. It sounds very interesting, fascinating work. I have no reason to question it, but I'm not in a position, having just heard it, to kind of give you a kind of mechanism of action, as it were.
So does this all come back to antioxidant status and the ability to quench free radicals, that this has this effect on UGT?
No, it's a straightforward chemical effect, because these flavonoids and catechins have got similar structures to testosterone.
Oh.
So the large ring systems that OH is hanging off, etc. But with regard to the antioxidant story, I don't know if you understand or if you heard the various stories where the red wine as a preventive antioxidant have come for, but the story I heard was that somebody did a clinical study on people in France compared to other European countries, and they found that in France people died less of heart attacks.
Yeah, but there's a lot of, that's called the French paradox. There's a lot of reasons for that besides red wine.
Well, the reason that people studied was when they went back and looked later on, they found that in France they don't usually have heart attack on the death certificate. They call it sudden death.
Oh.
So if you bring the sudden deaths up to heart attacks, then you get the same level in European countries.
Wow, now that's something I hadn't heard, and that's intriguing.
Yep, and that's, of course, the red wine took off, and we published a paper some 5 years ago showing that some wines, not all, some have got pretty high levels of some not too nice metals like manganese, etc.
Really?
So there are things in wines that aren't necessarily too good for you, and they're not only alcohol.
Do you have a list of which wines those are?
Yeah, well, we published it in our paper. Basically, we took from all the wines that had been published, where they published the levels of metal ions in the wines. Then we applied a risk analysis tool called the target hazard quotient to it, and we found that some of the wines had a target hazard quotient that wasn't particularly good for you. Mm. But I must stress, this is if you drank one 250 ml glass every day for kind of 50 years.
Okay, so 50 years is a long time, but let's face it, there are people who drink wine every single day of their lives. My grandfather was one of those people. I mean, but he lived to be 98, and he made his own wine.
Oh, no, I quite enjoy one of the wines that was given to us as a gift, as a race kind of thing, so I don't have a problem with drinking wine. But I do have a problem with people saying, you know, you can't say there's anything wrong with it.
Yeah,
and I have a problem with people say it's full of antioxidants. Well, my work and the work of my team have demonstrated that there are antioxidants there. Some of them are very effective, but a lot of them don't do anything when you look at them carefully.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to wine and it comes to lots of things, you know, I admit that I drink wine, but I also say that I do not drink wine under some misassumption that drinking some wine is better for you than not drinking wine at all. And when people always shoot back to me that, well, resveratrol or the French paradox, all that, I say, you know, there's probably some nutritive value in the undigested pin oats in horse manure, but I'm not going to eat a pile of horse manure in order to get that minute benefit when there's so much wrong with it. And so when people point at these things and say, well, there's antioxidants in wine. Yeah, but there's alcohol. Alcohol's been shown to shorten telomere length. It's been shown to compromise the mitochondria of the heart over time. It's been shown to do so many change calcium channels in the heart. It's been shown to do so many bad things when you weigh the risks or the benefits against, you know, you have to admit, look, I drink wine because I like the buzz. It's not doing anything good for me.
Well, one of the worst things I would suggest that wine does for you is help put on weight.
Yes.
So it turns you potentially towards obesity. Now, if you think about that, if you're drinking low-carbon chain alcohol, it's a high-energy foodstuff, what does the body do when you eat, when you drink? The body takes the food and converts it into fat.
Right.
So you're burning up the alcohol because it's high energy and the body isn't storing that, so it's storing your food as fat. So that's probably one of the worst things alcohol can do to you if, you know, we're not talking about huge amounts, of course, where you're damaging your liver and everything else.
Right. So wait, let me make sure, because you know what? The way that alcohol and wine, since we're talking about it, produces a fat gaining effect has always eluded me. So what you're saying is that the wine causes a substrate utilization change.
Well, I mean, you know, your body's metabolizing the wine, so it's getting energy from the wine. So therefore, it's taking your food and storing that as fat.
Right, right.
I mean, if you see somebody who doesn't eat very often, you know, somebody who drinks an awful lot and doesn't eat very often, they'll be as thin as a rake.
Yes.
People who drink a lot and eat, then, you know, the body has to compensate for that additional energy that's coming in.
You know, I always thought the linkage between alcohol consumption and body fat accumulation was that it also has been shown to have some effects on the thyroid. It impairs thyroid function. I thought, well, it lowers energy metabolic processes and lowers energy consumption. But I see what you're saying is much more acute. I can see it because most people drink wine with a meal.
Yep. And I mean, I wouldn't say it's just true one pathway either.
No, I understand, but that pathway has never crossed my mind, what you just said.
Yep.
This is really...
I mean, the other thing is, with all of these discussions, I mean, I have one thing up in front of my screen at the moment, one of the papers we used, again, to move the conversation along. One of the anti-cancer drugs that we take is actually excreted by the UGT2B17.
Wow.
So you start having red wine with that, or you start having green tea with that, or a foodstuff with these components in it, are you affecting the level of the anti-cancer drug? But equally, if you have a drug that's very, very expensive, could you keep it in the body a bit longer by giving somebody a green tea supplement? So you could economically favor the pharmacokinetics of the drug
by
inhibiting the enzyme. So there's a huge area that this research can move into. As far as I'm aware, it's the first paper, the first two papers that have looked at the interaction of foodstuffs with testosterone. But, you know, it obviously can be extended to, you know, quite a number of drugs, etc. Because these UGTs, they're actually used to detoxify things as well as to get rid of drugs, whether they're endogenous or pharmaceutical.
You know what, Dr. Norton? It's always great to have you on the show. And I can say with complete assuredness that I know you're going to be back on because your group studies some of the most exciting and interesting topics. Thank you so much for making time to come on the show
today.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon, okay?
Bye.
Okay. All right. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to be talking about statin drugs. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometime pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Happy New Year!
Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
People who are looking for performance and health benefits turn to WayNaturalUSA.com. WayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from Amish grass-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all of the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. There's only three ingredients in WayNaturalUSA: grass-fed whey protein concentrate, organic flavor, and stevia. Nothing else. Go to WayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WHEYNaturalUSA.com.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest protein bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
My friends are always asking me what I do to keep my face so youthful and fresh looking. I use RG Cell Super Stem Cell Support. RG Cell is the only cosmeceutical with penetrating anti-aging messenger molecules that activate old and dormant stem cells to restore your skin to a healthier, younger appearance. This helps to repair DNA, stimulate new cell growth, and aggressively eliminate wrinkles. You can learn more by visiting superhumanradio.com and clicking the RG Cell banner ad today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. I know that as we age, some of us end up on statin drugs. We've talked a lot about the myth linked between cholesterol and heart disease. We can talk about that ad infinitum, but there's still a lot of people out there who are going to follow their doctor's direction and get on statin drugs. They're going to go to the gym. They're going to train. And they're going to ask themselves, gee, you know, why don't I see the responses to exercise that I used to see? Perhaps I don't have the strength that I used to have. It's diminishing. There may be a reason for that. And we're going to talk with Dr. Steen Larson, who is a scientist over at the Center for Healthy Aging at the University of Copenhagen. Welcome to the show, Dr. Larson.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so first of all, let's talk about the paper that your group has researched. Why did you even look at the linkage between muscular energy and output and statin drugs?
The idea came actually because we have been studying a lot of patients with type 2 diabetes, and almost 100% of those guys are actually on statin treatment. So that was interesting because that, in the perspective of type 2 diabetes, that was a confounding factor. So we wanted to look into what the drug statin does to energy metabolism, and our lab is looking primarily at mitochondria, which are the cells that is producing energy, so that's quite important for all of us. So that's the idea that came from that.
Okay. All right, so what did you look at? What did you find?
We looked at 10 patients that was treated with simvastatin for a longer period of time, and we looked at the muscle metabolism, where we took some muscle samples from those subjects and looked into mitochondrial function, and found that it was reduced in people taking statins compared to control subjects. And then we also found that patients treated with statins also has an impaired glucose tolerance, which is a negative effect of the drug too.
And does that not precipitate itself in quite often hyperprolactinemia, where the muscles feel like they're burning and fatigued all the time?
Yeah, that's correct. There has been many studies out there trying to link the most common side effect with statins, as you are mentioning, muscle pain. And we actually think that we have found a mechanism that can explain this, that the patients that has been treated with statins have a lower energy production, and they also have a lower amount of coenzyme Q10 that is in the cells that is producing energy. So that could be a link between the drug and then also the side effect that is muscle pain, which is a problematic side effect when people actually want to go out and go for a run or go into the gym and work out. So that's not so good.
Right. Now, okay, so, but there's lots of pathways that statin drugs may precipitate this weakening, if you will, of the muscle structure itself. Aside from the possible effects on glucose entry and metabolism, you have a direct effect on something that the mitochondria requires, which is coenzyme Q10, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Coenzyme Q10 is, you can call it a bottleneck in the mitochondria that is shuttling electrons to produce energy from two different complexes in the mitochondria. And if you have an impaired amount, or if you have a reduced amount of Q10 in the mitochondria, that would actually imply that you can't produce as much energy as you would if you didn't have taken the statin. Well, that's at least what our results has pointed in that direction.
Are there any other pathways that we see the statin drugs causing muscle weakness and reduction in power output?
As far as I know, I don't think that there has been any studies actually looking at that and have been able to find the mechanism. So I think our study is the first one that actually is reporting a reduced mitochondrial function due to the reduction in Q10. I mean, there has been a different hypothesis that if you take statins that lowers cholesterol in the plasma, it also might lower cholesterol in the membranes of the muscle cells.
That's where I was going next.
Yeah, and that could be that could it has been linked to a reduced cholesterol in the membrane has been linked to muscle weaknesses, but I don't think it's that clear compared to what we actually have been.
You know, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but people who have the most severe muscle wasting effects from statin drugs, which I believe is called rhabdomyosin, is that right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
These people see muscle wasting, weakness in the muscle, and so on. But it appears to me that statin drugs attack the muscle from several different pathways. If in fact you wanted to create a drug that was designed to weaken and minimize muscle growth simultaneously, you would come up with a statin drug because it seems to do it very, very efficiently. It reduces the entry and utilization of glucose. It stifles the mitochondrial function, and it looks like it has some effect on muscle wasting in some people at a minimum.
I think that the pathway that it is taking is that it is lowering cholesterol for sure, and that's of course a really positive effect of the drug. But in the same pathway, it also goes into the Q10 cycle and reduces this, and then it also this has never been shown before, and hopefully we can show that in one of our next papers. But it has also been shown that if you lower cholesterol, there is a potential link to an increased ceramide and DHCl in the muscle, which is connected to insulin resistance, which is the focus on type 2 diabetes. That it seems like if you take at least some of the statins, you will of course lower the cholesterol in these subjects, but it would also increase insulin resistance. And that's a really, really bad side effect, because then all patients, at least in Denmark, if they have type 2 diabetes, they are treated with the statins. So it actually, maybe it lowers the cholesterol in those people or patients too, but it actually increases their type 2 diabetes, if you can follow me.
I do follow you. See, I have to speak frankly here, with no disrespect to the pharmacological community or the medical orthodoxy. You know, the early work on the linkage between cholesterol and heart disease is coming apart now. Dr. Key's research has been reevaluated, and we realize that he did not control for so many things that you could not get that kind of research to appear credible in today's scientific community. Some of the early research that was done on herbivores to create the linkage between plaque buildup, atherosclerosis, and cholesterol does not play out in carnivores and omnivores. And so when you start looking at, you're right, these drugs do very well what they set out to do, which is lower cholesterol. But the evidence that lowering cholesterol has any type of impact on heart disease has pretty much been challenged by numerous credible institutions now. So then that begs the question, well, if we're really not sure that lowering cholesterol is going to save lives, then why do we want to give people a drug that clearly is going to do something to shorten the lives, which is increase the risk of insulin resistance, reduce metabolic function of muscle, and in some cases, reduce the ability for some of the most elderly of patients to remain ambulatory, which will only lead them into an institution sooner, and who wants to live longer? You know, I mean, if I was faced with if someone said to me, "Look, you've got to take these drugs, but in a year or two, you're going to be crippled, and you're going to spend the last 15 years of your life in a wheelchair facing a wall, and someone's going to change your diaper," I'd say, "Give me a gun. I'm going to go now," because that's making people live longer without any quality of life and making them a burden on the system is not the answer either, in my humble opinion. And I know I'm not accredited. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist like yourself doing the hard work. So I'm not challenging your work. But what I am saying is your work makes me think even more so. Why the heck are we still pursuing this statin drug approach?
It's an excellent question, and I frankly doesn't have an answer to it. But I completely agree with you that if you have only one problem, one factor that is high cholesterol, and in Denmark there is around 10-12% of all people in Denmark that is taking statins. And out of those, maybe 6% of those is only having a high cholesterol, which means that even though it could be dangerous for you, it's not like...
Right. They don't have any of the real other risk markers that say, oh, my goodness, no. we have to intervene from a... And I see they're doing that here, Dr. Larson. They're doing it in the United States now. The Food and Drug Administration has approved statin drugs to be prescribed by doctors as a prophylactic. They'll go to somebody and they'll say, look, you have no risk factors for heart disease, but if you start taking these now, you won't have them later on. And that's not true. They can't guarantee that, number one. Number two, the pharmaceutical companies here in the United States realize that people are going, I don't want statin drugs anymore. So now they're repurposing them. They're saying, well, you know, they seem to have an effect on inflammation. They also may have an effect on pain management. So they're trying to repurpose them because they're going, okay, you're right. They didn't help anybody with heart disease, but they may be good for this because they don't want to lose that revenue stream. And they want to give doctors a reason to say, look, I know you were taking it for this before and that's not true anymore, but keep taking it for this now.
Yeah.
And I don't, is it like that? Is it like there, where you are as well? Are they trying to repurpose these drugs?
Yeah. I mean, it is like that, and that's also why I think that there is so many people out there that is taking this drug without a reason for it, and I can see that this is really problematic because if let's say you are 65 years old, you don't have anything on except for a little bit high cholesterol, and you actually are having a active lifestyle where you go for a run or go for a walk or
right.
go to the gym. And then you take those statins, and it in some cases it would actually mean that an active person prior to statin use can actually don't do what he or her was able to do before that. And that's, in my opinion, that's a lifestyle that is taken away from you. So as you said before, then is it worth living 2 years longer if the last 15 years of your life you can not do anything that you actually was thinking was fun before that. So it's a huge problem, and I think it's a matter of drug companies earning a lot of money selling these drugs. I mean, it has been since 2002, I guess, it has been the most selling drug in the world. So there is companies out there earning a lot of money on this. That could be one reason for why a lot of people are
on them.
I will not use the word misused, but I think it's problematic. And as you know, and many other knows, physical activity is maybe the best medicine in the world.
Absolutely. But you know what else? We have to take a break, Dr. Larson, and we're going to pick this up in greater detail when we come back. But no one ever talks about the Hawaii study. The University of Hawaii has done two watershed studies that conclusively point to the undeniable fact that for those at 70 years and above, the ones with the highest cholesterol levels live the longest. They live the longest. And no one talks about this study. It's almost like when you bring it up within conversational groups where lots of doctors are, they look at you. They don't even nod their head. They don't even go, I heard about it. I haven't heard about it. It's so challenging of a thought that they can't comprehend it. They just move on to another subject. But no one pays attention to these two profound studies done by the University of Hawaii. That one of these studies, I stand to be corrected, had a significant cohort. It was like 6,000 people followed over the course of 15 or 20 years. And they concluded mm-hmm. that the 70 plus individuals at the beginning of the study and through the study who had the highest cholesterol levels lived the longest. And those who had, yeah. and those who had adjusted cholesterol levels through the use of statin drugs, where their cholesterol levels were below 180, they died the soonest. And no one cares about that research. It's just amazing to me. You know, the medical community is so selective on what they want to believe because the pharmaceutical agenda is driving what doctors see and feel.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I haven't read the study you're talking about in details, but I could imagine that they in that study you might see that those guys that has been treated with statins actually reduces the activity level.
Sure.
And that is a good proof that if you have a little bit high cholesterol, then you shouldn't take the activity away from you, because then that will just get everything worse, right?
Well, here's what I want to do. I want to take a commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about some potential action steps that people can take if they are on statin drugs. There's something that the pharmaceutical industry's refused to address that I want to talk about for a couple minutes. We're talking this hour with Dr. Steen Larsen from the University of Copenhagen about the effects of statin drugs on muscle power and output. You're listening to Super Human Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, melanotan-2, mechanogrowth factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Companies.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. As you can tell, I'm sounding a little bit better. It appears that whatever attacked my body, call it the flu, call it whatever, is passing. And I thought I was going to be able to get through the whole interview without a lozenger in my mouth, but it seems like I need one right now. So I apologize in advance. Couple reminders. Take the poll. Guys in the audience, are you worried about thinning hair, receding hairline, or going bald? There's a poll on superhumanradio.com. I'd like you to weigh in because we have a couple shows that we're going to do that will give you some tactical steps on addressing it. Secondly, the Age Force Fat Burner Patch free month trial will end tomorrow at midnight. Don't wait another minute. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad. The Fat Burner Patch now also includes 7-Keto DHEA, a well-known and effective thermogenic aid. What do you have to lose except a few pounds? A free month. Try it. Welcome back to the discussion. We're talking with Dr. Steen Larsen from the University of Copenhagen. Dr. Larsen, it was taught to me many years ago by Dr. Steven Sinatra, author of The Sinatra Solution. He was a cardiovascular surgeon who spent most of his career cracking people's chests open, doing bypass surgeries and so on, until he learned about a nutraceutical cocktail of magnesium, CoQ10, D-ribose, and acetyl carnosine, I think, and acetylcarnosine, having profound effects on heart failure. And he talked about the fact that statin drugs reduce the production, they inhibit the production and the recycling of CoQ10, and CoQ10's lack of production in the heart leads to the cardiomyocytes of running out of fuel, so to speak, of energy and being able to pump properly. Now, many people have known about this. You cite it again in your research. The pharmaceutical industry knows about it. Why isn't the pharmaceutical industry? Well, I know I'm this is a rhetorical question. I'm not expecting you to know the answer, but why doesn't the pharmaceutical companies come out and say, look, every statin drug now comes with 200 milligrams of CoQ10 already in it? Or better yet, why aren't doctors telling their patients, I'm going to prescribe this statin drug. I recommend that you also go to the health food store and start taking CoQ10. And lastly, wouldn't CoQ10 supplementation help people on statin drugs? Shouldn't everybody who's taking a statin drug be taking a CoQ10 supplement?
Yes, is the short answer. The problem with this is that nobody has actually, if you talk about skeletal muscle and not heart muscle, then there hasn't been any studies that has investigated this on muscle level. But a lot of studies has actually interviewed people and asking if they had muscle pain after they have taken statins, and then they have been supplemented with CoQ10, and suddenly the pain just disappears. And that is, it's for me a good question, and I don't understand why the general practitioner doesn't subscribe that too, because, I mean, CoQ10 has no side effects, at least not in the doses that should be enough for saturating the mitochondria with CoQ10 again. So, in my opinion, it's completely... Yeah, you could say crazy that people actually don't just take that as a supplement, because that I think would be beneficial for everybody, and if it wasn't beneficial, then it wouldn't do more harm, if you can say.
Right.
So I think it's definitely something that people should start to look into, and it's something that we in Copenhagen, Center for Healthy Aging, will look into in the nearest future. Because, of course, if you could take a supplement with a diet supplement with Q10 and it would rescue your muscle pain after the statin treatment, then that would just be great.
It'd be interesting to find out what reestablishing CoQ10 production would have on the insulin resistance phenomenon as well. But, you know, it could very well be that the cell is preparing itself by letting less glucose in because it's not burning as much energy. It goes, well, we don't need as much. So how do we block this glucose from coming in? Well, we change the insulin resistance receptor status. We change the GLUT4 receptor status. We say keep this sugar out. It could be so simple as that.
It could be so simple, but the problem is nobody has looked at it in humans. There has been a study published a couple of years ago, or maybe last year, where people had been looking at rats and trained them and then added statins and Q10 on top of it. And they found out that, as expected, that if you have a rat running in a treadmill and you give them statins, then they will lower their endurance capacity and their maximum oxygen uptake, which is a really bad thing.
Right.
But then a group of rats also received Q10 and actually restored all of the oxygen again. So, I know it's in rats, but it's a good start. And I think that people, even though the medical doctors aren't going to say that to their patients, that they should supplement with Q10, I think there's no harm done in trying it on yourself. I mean, if you have muscle pain, if you take statins and they can disappear if you take Q10 on top of it, then I don't see a problem with that.
What do you hope clinicians and patients, both in Copenhagen as well as around the world, take away from your group's research?
Could you say it one more time?
What do you hope that clinicians and patients as well, there in your country and around the world, take away from your research? Well, how do you want people to interpret this research? What do you want them to think after they read it?
I hope that they can see that it could be a possible mechanism for the muscle pain. And then the follow-up study, as we talked about just before, is that people should think that Q10 could restore this unbeneficial side effect. So if people would think of our paper in that direction, then I would be happy.
Do you have another study ready to go? Are you guys planning on a follow-up?
We are planning on a follow-up, and we actually just received funding for a huge study on patients with taking statins and looking at the same thing, but going more into detail with the insulin resistance that is also appearing. And then we would like to in a subgroup of these patients, actually train them and then add statins and statin plus Q10, as we talked about before with the rats, because if you could get a high enough number of patients in this model with the Q10 and statins, then that could answer a lot of the problems that people taking statins actually can feel on themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's intriguing stuff, and it has to be discussed, unfortunately. There's a lot of people in my audience that are going, well, why is anyone taking statins? They don't work, blah, blah, blah. But there's still a lot of people out there. I have good friends who I've talked to about, look, find other alternatives to correct hyperlipidemia. Find other methods of correcting high LDL levels. Find other methods, but don't take statin drugs. And they say, they go to their doctor and talk about it, and their doctors scare the hell out of them. They go, look, you know, you've got risk factors. You'll have a heart attack if you don't take the statin drugs. And then I'd say to them, well, go back to your doctor and ask him if he can guarantee that you won't get a heart attack while taking the statin drugs. And, of course, it's a rhetorical question. No doctor is going to say that because they can't guarantee it. So there's lots of people out there still taking statin drugs. Lots of people who need to know that if you're taking statin drugs, there are risks inherent in this drug, and you need to understand what they are, and you need to make your own decisions on what you think you need to do to help mitigate some of those risks while you're taking them. I think it's a very, very important discussion. I really, really do.
Yeah. I think it's also a matter of, there is a lot of different statins on the market, right? And those statins seem to act in different ways in the human body. So maybe if one experiencing muscle pain with one of the statins, then they could ask their doctor if they could change the statins.
It's my understanding that the more efficient ones, the ones that do a better job milligram per milligram, would be the biggest culprits, and then they would switch you to one that is not as efficient, but then they end up having to boost your dose in order to get your cholesterol levels to the target range again.
Yeah, but in my mind, I think that those statins that is having the biggest effect is those that is lipophilic, that can enter that can penetrate to membranes and actually have their effect on skeletal muscle too. And if you take one of those drugs that is not lipophilic, then they won't penetrate the membranes and they won't go into the muscle. And it is correct that those statins that is giving muscle pain is also those that is reducing cholesterol the most
efficiently, right?
But these drugs are so efficient in lowering cholesterol. So if you, let's say you lower your cholesterol level with 30%, then in many of the cases, that's more than plenty to get your cholesterol down to a level where nobody is afraid that it's going to do any harms. And
right,
those drugs can do that. It depends on if you want to reduce it 30 or 40%. And in my mind, that's not the problem. So I would suggest that if people experience muscle pain, then they should, at their first, they should try to talk to the doctors about if maybe physical activity would help them more than taking
right.
the drug. And if that's not the case, then they could add diet also. And then if that didn't help them, then they should maybe try to shift the drug to another statin. But there has been some diet supplementation product. I don't remember the recall the name right now, but where they also actually see a reduction in cholesterol. But those reductions is maybe 10%, and that's not
right.
so much.
Right.
So
what I have to believe, who are you getting your funding from? I have to believe it's not from the pharmaceutical industry that profits from statin drugs. Am I right about that?
That is correct. But in this particular study, we have been applying a lot of small research funds in Denmark that gives you like maybe $10,000-$15,000 each time. And then if you add enough of those small funds up, then you can do a study like this. But
yeah.
for sure, none of the big pharmaceutical companies will fund a study like
no.
that.
No. In fact, not only will they won't fund them, but they'll challenge your research probably at some point in time.
Yeah,
I read a
letter from an American scientist. I can't remember the name of him, but he actually also picked up this problem that if you want to investigate different drugs, then it is so difficult to be funded. So that's actually important to do. That is actually impossible to do studies, and that's in my mind a big problem because. The more you read in the literature, the more you see, you find out that different drugs is actually not so well tested. And that's a problem because, I mean, if people are getting muscle pain from a drug and we actually don't even know yet what mechanism it is, then it's problematic in my opinion.
Do you, what agency do you have in your country that's similar to the Food and Drug Administration here in the United States?
I actually don't know if we have an agency like that in Denmark. I'm not familiar with the name of
The Food and Drug Administration is a division of the U.S. government that is supposed to be there to protect the American people from the villainy and tyranny of the pharmaceutical and food manufacturers. However, since their inception, they have done nothing but allow the pharmaceutical industry to exploit in a parasitic fashion the American people to the point that even when they are caught in bed with the companies that they're supposed to be providing oversight, and even when those incidences cause numerous documented deaths of American people, no one I repeat, no one goes to jail. No one is reprimanded. They just continue to operate. Now, the interesting thing about the Food and Drug Administration is that they take the research provided by the pharmaceutical industry, and they review it, and they go, okay, this appears to be good, and they approve it. So this means that the companies that have to profit from their research can manipulate the numbers, lie, hide things, pass it along, and they do no testing. The Food and Drug Administration here does no testing of its own. In my opinion, we all know that science is proven or disproved when you can reproduce a study and have the same outcome, correct? Okay. So you would think that the Food and Drug Administration, who gets millions and hundreds of millions of dollars from the manufacturers of drugs and food products, would take some amount of that money and hire their own brain trust and do parallel research of the research that the pharmaceutical company is doing so that then they can go, well, we didn't see that result. We saw this. Instead, it's not until 3, 4, 5,000 Americans die, then someone looks at the original research and goes, wait a minute, you hid these numbers. Well, the people are already dead. And so we have an incestuous organization that is at the government level that allows these companies to literally kill American people in the name of profits.
Yeah, that's scary. And there's actually been a new initiative in Europe, at least in some of the journals that is publishing all these scientific papers, has actually done exactly what you were saying now, that they are trying to get funding to do studies that already has been done. And then if your study, let's say the study that we are talking about today, will be selected, then I'll receive an email asking, do you want to get the data from another lab that is doing exactly the same as you have been doing? And then you can feel free to publish it, or you can not publish it, of course, but then that's like a security check, at least for the researchers in Europe, that if you are playing with open cards, if you can say so, then that would be beneficial for everybody.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation here. I know it's that way in the UK. I know it's very similar in Canada. The food and drug manufacturers really, they just look at people as consumers, not as people, and lives have to be lost in order to make progress, and you know. For the greater good is a common term. Well, yeah, some people die, but for the greater good, you know, it's great unless you're the small percentage that's dying. The whole greater good phenomenon is acceptable. Listen, Dr. Larson, I want to thank you very much for taking time to come on the show. I think it's great work that your group is doing. It's important to point these things out to people and doctors, especially who prescribe statin drugs still today. As you point out, for someone who has very little, if not just one risk factor, putting them on one of these drugs can actually make the wrong turn in their life.
Yeah,
so
that's for sure.
Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. It has been a pleasure.
Okay, take care. All right, so we also want to thank Dr. Declan Norton for coming on and talking about the effects of the polyphenols and ECGC in wine. And tea, its ability to both increase circulating testosterone levels as well as possibly mask the epitestosterone portion of it. That's an interesting concept right there that I'm going to investigate more. Thank you for listening to Superhuman Radio. Don't forget, tomorrow is Thursday. We will be performing an episode of Subversity Science Roundup where the brilliant Adele Musa applies the Subversity Sniff Test to science and the news. And I think we're going to have something that we're going to break the news on. We'll see if the research came through tomorrow as well. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening.
2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the H-Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the H-Force banner ad today.
If you want to build muscle and burn fat, if you want to transform your body, your health, and fitness, then your goal should be to get a copy of The Blueprint from Rob Ragish. Learn what the Blueprint Army already knows. There is no faster way to change the way you look and feel than by using The Blueprint. And now, when you order The Blueprint, you will also get absolutely free the Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms in a Single Workout Seminar. That's a $20 value, absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Blueprint banner ad today. Make 2013 your best year ever by getting the jump on burning more body fat. Now you can try the H-Force Fat Burner Patch free for 1 month. What do you have to lose except for the weight? You've heard listeners on the show talk about how great it works for them. What are you waiting for? This patch works for anyone at any age. Never any jitters or stimulants. Just fat loss. Don't miss the boat. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the H-Force banner ad today. Mass Pro Synthogen is unlike any supplement to come before it, both in form and function. Synthogen is the world's first messenger RNA translation accelerator. Messenger RNA is the rate-limiting step in growing new muscle. Synthogen rapidly stimulates protein synthesis on demand, day or night. Synthogen allows you to train harder, longer, stronger, and more frequently than your competition. Synthogen is the absolute fastest drug-free recovery agent available. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Synthogen banner ad to learn more. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechano Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like Triptorelin or Follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.